And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. Hour number two is coming up. If you're just joining us, welcome in. We got a lot to talk about in the second hour, and we're ready to get to it. This is Tony Bean, Vice President for Student Life and Christian Worldview at North Greenville University, where Christ makes the difference and where we're turning out transformational leaders for the church and society. Hannah Miller, my co-host, is out today. She's going to be wrapping up her vacation, I guess, today and tomorrow. And we'll be back in the studio on Monday, so we look forward to that. All right, real quick, before we get back to the Inspector General's report, I want to just mention yesterday we had some key endorsements in the governor's race runoff and the 4th Congressional District runoff. Yesterday, Lee Bright was endorsed by Stephen Brown and James Epley. So two of the candidates that he defeated came out and said they were going to support him yesterday. And then on top of that, in the governor's race, both of the major candidates that were running in opposition, other than John Warren, running in opposition to Governor McMaster, came out and endorsed John Warren yesterday. Catherine Templeton said she spent a lot of time with John Warren, asked, and that he was very patient and answered all of her questions. Apparently, she also met either with Governor McMaster or somebody from the governor's office, but decided to endorse Warren. And, of course, the other was Kevin Bryant, who yesterday decided to put his support behind John Warren. So this is, I'm telling you, this is going to be pretty interesting, this runoff. Now, this morning they're doing a recount, but I'm telling you, it's not going to change the outcome of who's going to be in the runoff. It's going to be William Timmons and Lee Bright. And in 2 weeks, you can go back to the polls. By the way, if you voted in the Republican primary the first go-around, you can't vote for a Democrat this time around. You can vote. If you didn't vote in the Republican primary the first time, you can vote this time. But if you did vote, you can't switch parties. You've got to vote in the Republican primary. So just a little information there for you as you begin to think about this. All right, let's get back. Let's get some reaction to the Inspector General's report. Trey Gowdy yesterday had this to say about bias. Cut number 8. I'll tell you what. Let's back up to cut number 2 first, and get this comment about what he says his fellow citizens' expectations are.
What my fellow citizens expect is for the agent that does the follow-up to be free of taint and bias, like 99% of the FBI agents are. It just so happened the one picked to follow up and lead the Russia investigation has manifest animus and can't think of a single person to vote for Donald Trump. So those two are inextricably intertwined. Most of my fellow citizens would say, yeah, I want to know what Russia was doing to us in 2016, but I also want the person that's finding out, that's investigating it, to be free of bias and free of taint.
Yeah, absolutely. I would like that as well. But that's not what took place in this case. And the other thing I would simply say is I don't know. I mean, Trey Gowdy is saying on faith that 99% of the FBI is free of bias. We don't know that. I just want to reiterate that. What we know is that the agents involved in this case were biased. Whether the inspector general says it was biased or not, he called them biased and then said, well, it wasn't really biased. It's really confusing. But we don't know. To say that the rest of the agency is unbiased and does their job with professionalism, since they haven't been investigated and nobody's looked at their work, how do we know that they're unbiased? If this is a sampling of the FBI, then maybe we've got a bigger problem. Christopher Wray thinks so because all the agents are going to be trained in how to be objective and to not have the appearance, which he's going to use that phrase, of course, of bias in any cases. All right, here's Trey Gowdy again, and he's talking about bias this time. This is cut number 8. This is from yesterday.
Peter Strzok, the FBI agent who was on Hillary Clinton's investigation and arguably the lead Russia investigator, not only wanted to stop his campaign, but once he won, got on the Mueller probe because he wanted to impeach him. That is a level of animus and bias that everyone should reject. And Chris Wray, I'm sorry, you're wrong. Chris, there are consequences. The consequences are that your fellow citizens question whether or not they can have confidence in the world's premier law enforcement agency.
Yeah, and that's going to continue to be the case until this mess can get cleaned up. And whether it, you know, I don't know how it's going to get cleaned up. Nobody seems to want to do much about it other than go, oh, this is so bad, tisk tisk. But we're not ending up with anything actually being done about it.
We need Ephraim Zimbalist Jr. back.
Yeah,
you know,
that's right.
It's not happening.
Dun, 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 dun. I can still see that coming up. Sunday night. I think it was like 8 o'clock or something like that.
Yes, it was.
All right, Bob Goodlatte. How in the world do I remember? That was the 60s. That stuff just gets burned into your brain, I think. Bob Goodlatte, a Republican from Virginia. He's also the chair of the House Judiciary Committee. This is cut number 7. Here's what he said about the IG report yesterday.
This report shows that there was special treatment given to Hillary Clinton in the investigation of her case. There is not standard procedures followed in investigating her, and there was special treatment given. There's no doubt that this was not proper process, and the report shows time and time again how Director Comey and others made mistakes, errors in judgment, or deliberate. People can draw their own conclusions, but it was improperly handled.
Yeah, there's that goes without saying.
If so it was what? She's walking around free. So what do we do?
I know, nothing.
We do exactly what you said earlier.
I know.
That are open this case again.
They're not going to do that. I mean, I would be shocked. Now, if President Trump can put some pressure on Sessions to appoint a special counsel to go back and investigate the whole thing again, or he really doesn't have to do that. Just the Justice Department can say to the FBI, all right, because of all the impropriety, mm-hmm. because of all the mistakes, because of all the appearance of bias, we want you to go and open this case again and investigate it. And I just don't think they're going to do it.
And this is what happens when you don't have a press that also wants to seek the truth, not just who they want to support, but the press should be putting the pressure on. Are you going to reopen this case?
Right.
This case looks like it was biased. How can you not reopen this case? They ought to be. I mean, and the people, you know, maybe we as the people can say, we want to see something done. I don't know.
Well, we can.
That should be the press's job.
We can say that. Look, I'm not going to rule it out completely. But here's the thing. The whole reason that this thing went the way it did is because everybody thought that Hillary Clinton was going to be the next president. And nobody, the FBI, it came out in some of these texts, the people in the FBI didn't want her ticked off at the FBI and taking it out on them when she becomes the most powerful person at the excuse me, when she becomes the most powerful person in the world. So a lot of this is just, oh, she's going to be president. And we can do whatever we want to do because all this stuff will go away. And don't tell me that President Obama didn't realize that and didn't say that to somebody. Just get her through this. Just let her skate. And then when she's president, this will be a distant memory. She gets to pick her AG just like I got to pick mine. My AGs, both of them, were in the tank for me, and Hillary can go out and get a tank AG for her and turn the Justice Department into her own personal defense fund, which is, I mean, essentially what was happening during the Obama years. All right, one more quote here. Rudy Giuliani was all over this yesterday. This is cut number 5. And, of course, you knew he would be because he's trying to undermine the Mueller investigation for his client, Donald J. Trump. Here we go.
We now have an investigation that, in the words of President Donald Trump, from the very beginning, has been a fix, a frame-up, and a witch hunt. It was led by Peter Strzok, who, it is disgraceful, And even for the present director of the FBI, to have him there tomorrow, it would be disgraceful.
Yeah. Well, look, I get Rudy's pain here. I mean, he's trying to defend the president. You got an investigation going on with Mueller that had people at one point working on it who definitely were biased, talking about viva la resistance. The investigation into these five agents, it'll be interesting to see what comes of that. But I'm just afraid they're not going to open anything when it comes to Hillary. She's going to skate. That's what the Clintons have done for 30 years, 40 years. They go out, they do what they do, and they come out with their skirts all nice and clean. And I don't understand it. I mean, most people would, just normal people, you and I, if we did a tenth of what the Clintons have done, we would be in the Gray Bar Hotel. And here's the thing, folks. Think about this. You know, I wasn't going to talk about this in detail, but yesterday, the Attorney General in New York filed a lawsuit against the Trump Foundation. Now, get this, the Trump Foundation for being a political arm of Donald Trump and the Trump campaign. Now, this is the same Attorney General who looked at the Clinton Foundation and said there was nothing to see here. I mean, look. I don't know what the Trump Foundation has done. Maybe the Trump Foundation did things that are not right. Maybe they funnel money from the campaign into places it wasn't supposed to go. I don't know. But I know this. For them to go after the Trump Foundation when they did not, the evidence was abundant that the Clinton Foundation should be investigated and nobody cared, is the height of hypocrisy and the appearance of bias. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Back in 3 minutes.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
Tell you what, let's do. Let's do celebrity birthdays. If you're having a birthday today, you're a celebrity on your birthday, and we say this to you.
Happy birthday!
Yes! Happy birthday to you. You share a celebrity birthday with Mario Cuomo, that was born on this day in 1932. Waylon Jennings was born today in 1937. Jim Varney. Hey, Vern. He was born today in 1949. Steve Walsh of Kansas, born today in 1951. He turned 67. Jim Belushi, the younger brother of John Belushi, is 64 today. Julie Haggerty, you remember her from the Airplane movies, Airplane 1 and then Airplane the sequel, is 63 today. Courtney Cox from Friends is 54. Neil Patrick Harris is 45. And Ice Cube is 49 years old today. He was one of the founders of gangsta rap, if you wonder about it. And he's an actor now. He's been in several things. Yeah. I don't know what all he's been. Ice Cube.
A lot of stuff.
A lot of stuff. Cube.
Was he ever in Law and Order?
The other guy.
No. That was another guy. That's another rapper. Yeah. He was in the SVU.
No.
I always want to call it SUV, but it was like... You know, that's when they all get in a big, you know, big car and go down the road.
Yep.
But it's Law and Order SVU, Special Victims Unit. He was in that one. And what was his name? It wasn't he wasn't Ice Cube. He was Ice-T. I think, yeah, he was Ice-T maybe. Anyway, they had some ice going for him. All right, a couple other things are out there in the news we hadn't talked about. How about some good news? The Fed... In Atlanta, the Atlanta Fed has now raised its Q2, that would be second quarter, GDP estimate to 4.8% from 4.6%. So now they're talking about the seasonally adjusted annual rate of growth is going to be probably somewhere north of 4%. Now, I'm going to tell you something. If that manifests itself, not only is there not going to be a blue wave, there could be a red squashing of the blue wave. You could see Republicans surfing the blue wave all the way back to majorities in the House and the Senate. And if that happens, they may make Donald Trump king. I mean, they may just remove the president title and turn him into some kind of dictator or king or something. If Republicans are able to pull this off. But this is after the retail sales release from the U.S. Census Bureau
The now cast of the second quarter real personal consumption expenditures growth increased from 3.4% to 3.6%. So what's driving the GDP and going to push it up over 4%, according to the Atlanta Fed? It's consumer confidence, which is at an all-time high, and consumer spending, which apparently in May, there's a lot of consuming going on out there. Remember Fritz Holland? Too much consuming going on out there. Well, there's a lot of people that are feeling pretty good, and they're going out and spending money.
Yeah, I am in my gas tank.
Yeah, that's right. Well, the prices did come down.
Yes, they did.
A wee bit.
I noticed that, about a nickel or so.
Just a wee bit. Yes, they're still pretty high. That's why I'm motorcycling today. I'm trying. One reason is I really enjoy it, and the other reason is it's a lot cheaper to put gas in that tank than it is in that Mustang. All right, Bill's on the phone. Hello, Bill.
A very good morning to you, Dr. Bean. And we'll thank God that you and your wife.
Yes, we got back safely. Thank you.
And we appreciate you. And I share this with some fellow Missionary Education Baptist, a great report you gave to us on the convention.
And, okay, good. I'm glad you liked
that.
It.
Yeah.
Sure.
Can I take a point of personal privilege here?
Well, so you're not going to talk about anything that we're talking about. You're going to say something that is totally out of left field.
Yeah, but it's something that I think you would like to hear, though.
All right. Okay? Yes, go ahead.
Yesterday, I know you've been busy working on your EDU, so I know you didn't have a time to do
EDD.
This.
EDD.
Yeah, I can't remember. All I know, the checks goes there.
Yes, that's correct.
My son, so.
Yes.
The NCAA yesterday.
Whoa. Hold the phone. Yes, did you just say your checks go to NGU for your son? How did I escape that? I did not know your son was at North Greenville.
He's been there. I told you. See,
when
that shows you.
Did you tell me
that?
You're right. Gary says
six months ago, I told you that he's been listening over the years to you and I communicate.
Oh, that's right.
And you're one of his favorite. And I told you,
I do remember that.
Double masters from Liberty, and he decided to come there for his doctor. You remember I told you that?
Okay. So he's
we know Dr. Butler and Dr. Long and all that. But let's not get into
it. Okay. Well, he's in the graduate school, but I want to get. So I got to meet this guy. I'm telling you.
He worked on his doctorates too, so that he followed you. You went the first year, and he came the second year.
Excellent. All right.
But don't do that now. But I told you that once before. And
I know.
Don't get into that.
I'm sorry.
But we appreciate your leadership and your inspiration for my son. I do. I appreciate it.
Okay.
Our family. But the NCAA yesterday made, I think, a very important ruling, and I'm sure Mr. Miller probably knew this. They ruled yesterday that a redshirt player or freshman can now play four games during the season and still be eligible to have four more years to play. And that is a major, major decision, because now if somebody get hurt and you got three games left, he can play all three games and still get in and play in the playoff and still be eligible for four more years. So I thought that was a major ruling, and I don't know how you think about that, but Mr. Miller, you know, I'm for sure he heard it. But
I think that's
great for student athletes, I guess that's what I'm saying, and for the university.
Well, according
to you don't have to wait for injuries now. You see what I'm saying?
Sports Illustrated, its redshirt rule change is a major win for both coaches and players. So they're agreeing.
I said players and universities. You
I get it.
That's very good. So I apologize, but I appreciate you allowing me.
No problem.
To interject that, but that is going to really, really be good for the players, the student athletes, and the universities. And it's just a great decision. And it didn't have to deal with paying the players and all. It's good to get good rulings that didn't have to deal with money. I guess that's where I'm coming from.
Well, let me ask you a question, though. Participate, what does that mean? I mean, I know what it means to me, but is there some nuance? Does that mean they can go out and play a few plays? Or does that mean they can play the whole game?
No, they can play
the whole game. They can start
the four whole games now.
Okay, all right. Well, that's what
it
I was
used to be. If you played just if And Clemson ran into this with when they had Deshaun Watson was there when he got hurt. Mm-hmm. They had a redshirt freshman they didn't want to put in. They went to stop. But what this means is simply that they can play the whole game, four whole games, even into the playoffs, and then still retain their 4 years of eligibility.
Yep.
And it doesn't have to be an injury. So it is. I just think it's just great for NCAA. And it's one of the better rulings they have done over the years. And I just I apologize for interrupting you, but I just that's something major. It's not being talked about, but you remember that's a $1 billion industry, the NCAA football.
Oh yes,
and,
it is.
And that's real, real good. And Clemson have lost two great quarterbacks over the last backup quarterback 2 years. Because somebody else came in and they left because they were afraid they lose, losing their eligibility to play.
Right.
Because it stacks the deck. So that's it. And I apologize again, but thank you for letting me share that. Since we're in Clemson, USC territory, that's very good.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. I appreciate that, Bill. Thanks for the call. Hope you have a great weekend. Let's since we got a little bit off of topic there, let's do this. Let's talk about DJ Fontana. Now, I'm going to see if Gary knows who that is. Do you know who DJ Fontana is?
DJ Fontana.
Yeah. It's okay. I did
a
not
jockey?
Know.
No. He rode the Triple Crown winner, Justify?
Nope. And he's not a disc jockey either. Cut number 9 will tell you about DJ Fontana. He's left us, but he had a significant role to play in early rock and roll.
Elvis Presley's longtime drummer, DJ Fontana, a rock and roll pioneer, has died at the age of 87 in Nashville. Fontana's son, David, announced the drummer's death on Facebook, writing, "My dad passed away in his sleep. He was very comfortable with no pain." Fontana was the last surviving member of Elvis's original core of musicians.
Well, you can do anything but take me over my blue suede shoe.
Fontana was a member of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he played with Presley for 14 years on many of Elvis's hits, like Blue Suede Shoes, Heartbreak Hotel, Hound Dog, and Jailhouse Rock. Michelle Pollino, Fox News.
Yeah, there you go. So kind of a pioneer, as they say, in rock and roll music. Mm-hmm. Being Elvis's drummer, like from the beginning, that's pretty significant.
Yeah, you're well set for life when you do that.
I would think he would have been, you know.
And
of course, I don't know.
I don't know
you
him.
Know, Colonel Tom Parker kind of skimmed a lot off of Elvis's top, so I don't know whether Elvis had enough to, you know, pass on to his minions or not. I mean, it's kind of hard. You know something that I was shocked about? Now that you mention that, I'm going to go ahead and throw this out there.
Okay.
I listened to Paul McCartney's biography, and it's a fascinating. I'd really like to go back and do it again because it was just fascinating. But one of the things that really disappointed me about Sir Paul is that he was pretty bad about paying his band members. I mean,
really?
Well, yeah. Now you would think
Wings.
What you would think that if you're in Wings, then, you know, when you're done with the tour, you go to the Bahamas and, you know, live out the rest of your life in peace, harmony, and lots of sunshine.
Yeah.
Well, it turns out that they had to end up trying to sue the guy to get paid, and what they were getting paid was not a lot. I mean, it wasn't. When I read, I don't remember the number, so I'm not going to throw it out there. But when I read the number, I was like, are you kidding me? This is what they're getting paid to be in Wings, and one of the top. I mean, in the 1970s, Wings was one of the top bands of the 70s.
They were on the run.
They were, and you know they were dealing with Uncle Albert and all kind of stuff.
Yeah,
and yet they just weren't. I mean, I guess they were on the run because they weren't getting paid. They had bill collectors chasing them around. That kind of gives a whole new meaning to the band on the run.
Well, what's Paul McCartney? What are you trying to hoard the money for?
I don't
have enough money from the Beatles, you know?
Well, you know, he sold the Beatles catalog. You remember that when Michael Jackson bought the Beatles catalog?
Mm-hmm.
$500 million?
Yeah.
Of course, it's worth
probably
three or four times. Yeah. I mean, there's no telling. There's no telling what it's worth now. All right, let's take a break and we'll come back. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Stay with us.
And here's your host, Dr. Tony Bean.
I'm just laughing at these signs. I found this website. It's got a people signs people hold up at the like at football games. And one's the Cleveland Browns rebuilding since 1964. And then you had another one. A guy's holding up a sign that says 0-13, and then he marks out 13, and it just puts 4. So, and then his wife's standing next to him holding up a sign that says he brought this sign last year. Oh, my gosh. All right, Barry's on the phone. He's got something serious to talk about. Hello, Barry.
Hey, Tony. A couple of questions. Did you hear there was the person that was involved, I can't remember his name, there was so much information blasted out. I don't know if it was Cronin or something like that, that had to do with Hillary Clinton's bleach bit in her hard drive and everything. And the statement said he lied to the FBI twice. And
yeah.
And then Comey turned around and gave him, and he admitted to it, and then Comey turned around and gave him immunity.
Yes, I did see that. In fact,
look what they did with Manafort, and then look what they're knocking down doors with Manafort, and look what they, you know, what they do to Flynn. I mean, this is madness. But
yeah,
let me ask you if you think that what the probability is of this, that, you know, they made this big thing about Russia, you know, all this foreign interference into election, which it goes on for years. Every country does it. We did it to Israel, you know, different things like that.
Right.
And I think that it's really a cover-up for the domestic interference and that political espionage that the Obama administration was doing all along with the unmasking and the spying on Trump campaign. So they're using the Russia thing to cover up the real domestic political espionage that was going on.
Well, they would love to have you at the White House, Barry, because that's exactly the case that Rudy Giuliani is going to make. If Mueller, look, let's just admit something here. Politically, what this is about, I mean, there's a reality here that we need to acknowledge and be concerned about. And then there's a political reality that is very simply that Donald Trump's loving every bit of this because it undermines the Mueller probe, and it's going to help Giuliani. If Mueller were to happen to come out with something, to be honest with you, I don't think he's got squat. I don't think he's going to have squat because I don't think squat happened. But let's say he comes out with something that says Trump did something. I don't know, obstruction of justice, whatever. I mean, there's no way that Mueller can say obstruction of justice for firing Comey now because Rosenstein told Trump he ought to fire Comey, and now we got the Inspector General's report that said that Comey was incompetent and violated the rules and should have been fired a long time ago. So all of this is pointing politically to the fact that no matter what the Mueller probe says when we get done, nobody's going to pay any attention to it. I mean,
that's true. Well, but no one's paying attention to the fact that the Mueller probe was to frame up from the beginning. The original reason why it was started, there was no evidence. A lot of the establishment Republicans are to blame for allowing the special counsel to begin with, because there was no evidence even to do it. And I mean, you don't think the probability is where they said, "Oops, Hillary didn't get elected. You know, we got to cover our tracks on the political espionage and the interference we try to do in the election."
Yeah.
So let's go forward with this Russia deal.
Oh, look, the Russia probe, you're exactly right about the Russia probe. I mean, the collusion was cooked up by the Democrats, and it was joined by the establishment because they really thought the whole purpose of this, the reason that this thing hasn't been wrapped up, if you ask me, the whole purpose of it was to put enough pressure on Trump to make him resign. I believe they thought within 6 months they would ramp up the pressure so high that he would have to resign, that they wouldn't have to impeach him, that he would just be shamed and driven out of office. And just,
you know,
like,
and
look,
Tony,
look, well, let me
I
finish, let me finish, let me
either.
Finish, let me finish, and then I'll let you have the last word. And yet the exact opposite has happened. All of this coming against Trump has made him more popular. His popularity since he got elected president has continued to grow. Now, whether people like this or not, it's just the truth. His popularity has continued to grow. And the same thing happened as when he was a candidate. Everybody thought they were going to destroy it. This is it. This is the story. Here it comes. No more Trump after this. And he just got it. It didn't matter. He kept his popularity kept growing. Now he's president of the United States. They're doing the same thing. come up with the Russia collusion thing. We'll drive him out of office. We'll shame him into oblivion. Did it work? No. He's still here. His popularity is at the highest level it's ever been. The economy's taken off. And now all this blue wave stuff looks like it's going to be a big bust. So anyway, now you get the final.
Let me ask you this. I think it's a smokescreen to think all these, the establishment, you know, just hated him because he was this vulgarian and all this. Because, you know, you see now that all these other politicians can be pretty vulgar, too. But the thing is, I don't think they liked his agenda on immigration and trade and all that. I think that's really what it was. More so, they're using his personality as a smokescreen.
Well, it's deeper than that, Barry. The establishment didn't like him because he's not one of them. Same reason they hated Reagan. I mean, it's not just policy.
Yeah, they did.
It's the fact that he didn't play by the rules. He didn't get there by the right track. How dare he run for president, first time you ever run for office, and get elected? That's the biggest thing that stuck in the establishment's craw of the Republican Party is that they couldn't make him and they couldn't unmake him. That's what drives them crazy. And they don't like some of his policies too, sure. But I think that's the bigger picture. Anyway, Barry, thanks for calling. 1-888-660-WLFJ, 888-660-9535. Got another chance here, another segment to get your voice heard before the program wraps up for a weekend and we get Hannah back to restore order on Monday. So if you want to get in, 888-660-9535. We'll be back.
Here's your host, Dr. Tony B.
Okay, we're only going to be Hannah-less for about 9 more minutes, and then Hannah will be back on Monday. So I thought we'd just make a run for it here with a bunch of stories, try to get them all out there. Cut number 10, Samantha Bee. Yeah, she may be a Trump basher, but she's not someone who can attract advertisers anymore after her infamous statement that she made about Ivanka Trump. Here we go.
1 week after Samantha Bee's apology for calling Ivanka Trump a feckless C-word, her advertiser count remains the same. Bee's late-night show Full Frontal on TBS hasn't been able to regain its advertisers, even after the host made an apology on her June 6th episode, the comedian admitting in her apology that she used the extreme vulgarity as an insult to slam Ivanka. But because it's a weekly show, the damage was done. According to Newsbusters, before the vulgar remark, Bee's TBS show had 19 advertisers, but when she apologized on the June 6th episode, she was down to 6 and has been unable to gain them back. Michelle Polino, Fox News.
Yep. People are not running to Samantha Bee, mainly because her particular brand of humor is just nasty. It's not even funny. You know, people are, I was listening this morning coming in to Fox News, and they were talking about the fact that people are starting to get to walk away from Saturday Night Live because they're tired of the same old not funny jokes about Donald Trump. It's all about politics. That's Saturday Night Live's turned itself into the poster child for, you know, left-wing treatment centers for Trump dysphoria, or the idea that they can't get over the election. And so there, a lot of people are going, you know, is Saturday Night Live ever going to be funny again? And so I think this stuff is starting to peak. I mean, some of this left-wing stuff that is outrageous is missing the mark and is causing more problems for progressives than it is solutions. You got to love this. I meant to talk about this yesterday. I just didn't get to it. If you should go to Fox News and search this out because it is hilarious. Levi Tillman, who's trying to get voters to vote for him in Colorado. He's a congressional candidate in Colorado, and he's obviously against the Second Amendment. Pepper sprayed himself in the face to demonstrate that what schools really need to do is not carry, we don't need guns in our schools, just put pepper spray in these glass cases where they can be broken and gotten to if a shooter comes up. So, yeah, this is typical progressive thinking. In walks somebody with an AR-15 or some type of weapon that they're shooting people, but what we need is a spray can. I mean, why not just get Raid? Just get bug spray.
That's what I would use.
Raid. I mean, or at least that hornet, you know, that hornet and wasp killer.
It can shoot away.
I started to say, you can project it. But here's the thing about pepper spray. You have to hit them in the face.
Yeah.
And it's only got a range of about 3, maybe 4 meters.
Yeah, you got to get fairly close.
I mean, you've got to get pretty. So, you know, a guy comes in with a gun and he's shooting people. What are you going to, you whip out your can of pepper spray and say, hey, look over here. Look at me. And then while he's looking at you, okay, hold it. Don't shoot. And then you spray him in the face. That's a great solution. But you ought to watch this guy. I mean, I'm telling you, it's hilarious. I've watched it several times.
Have you ever smelled pepper spray?
Never.
Oh, man.
Listen, I
we
guarantee you.
Some.
I don't know.
Yeah, a long time ago. I don't know. Yeah. Out for my wife or something. And I had it out in the backyard. The boys.
Yeah.
Apparently one of them shot it off.
Oh, my gosh.
And it didn't hit anybody directly. But it was, we were near enough to it. That stuff. Yeah. It will certainly, disable somebody for a second or two if you can hit them with it. But you got to get close.
I mean, and you've got somebody with a gun that can shoot you from
a long way. You're going to run toward the gun
way. Yeah,
with pepper spray?
That's what I'm saying. You got to get them to turn around. I mean, if you shoot them in the back with it or shoot them in the back of the head, I mean, it may aggravate them, but it's not going to incapacitate them.
That's why some murderers like guns. They don't have to get close like with a knife. They can kill somebody from a distance.
The Democrat, this is the story here from Fox. The Democrat proceeded to close his eyes and began spraying the pepper spray in his face. He's later seen trying to wash off his face by dunking his head into water and then spraying himself with a hose. This is what progressives ought to do. They're all wet anyway. Just stick your head in a bucket. Skip the pepper spray.
My goodness.
It's incredibly painful. Now I can't see anything, he said. Wow, that's intense. Really? You had to spray yourself? And Democrats make fun of conservatives who waterboard themselves, but here we've got a Democrat spraying pepper spray directly into his own face. That's pretty interesting. All right, here's NFL. Guess what? The NFL is not doing too well with its new policy, even though people, 61%, this is cut number 4, 61% of respondents say that the new policy on the national anthem allowing players to stay in the locker room is fine. They still don't want to watch the NFL anymore. Here we go.
For the first time, more Americans view the NFL unfavorably than favorably, albeit by just 1 point, 43% to 42%. Nearly two-thirds of voters had a favorable view of the league in 2013. 61% approve of the NFL's new national anthem rule, despite the low opinion of the league. It requires players who don't want to stand for the anthem to remain in the locker room while it's played. The same survey finds 68% of voters believe political correctness has gone too far. 46% think political or business leaders frequently make bad decisions because they're worried about offending someone. Tom Rigotti, Fox News.
Yeah, I mean, the NFL, they've got to be in a room somewhere, right? And they're going, man, we got a cash cow here. We're the most popular thing in the country. How can we destroy this? Oh, I know. Let's let these players go out and kneel during the national anthem, and then we'll completely wreck the whole system. You almost think that that's the conversation that they had to have. Did they not think that this was going to be a problem? I mean, it's going to be interesting to see what the ratings are this fall. I mean, because I guarantee you, they're going to be players. They're going to kneel. They're going to, because the teams have already said, we'll pay the fines. We'll pay the fine. And they don't even realize they're cutting their own throat here. When they've got, like I said, they had a great thing going. Now they're, nope. Let's go out and destroy it. By the way, just real quick, you know how many players out of 156 at the U.S. Open are at par or under after the first day? Yesterday was the first day of the U.S. Open. There's four. These are the best golfers in the world. I'm telling you, it's a tough course. Tiger Woods triple bogeyed the first hole. He's 9 strokes off the pace after the first day. But he's still out there. And people were talking about, oh, Tiger's getting there. Tiger might be making a run. Now, maybe he will in the next couple of days, but It doesn't look like that after the first day. In fact, the top golfers in the world, some of them, are really struggling at the U.S. Open this year. Interesting. All right, have a great weekend. Please enjoy yourself. Be careful out there, and join us on Monday as Hannah returns.
The opinions expressed on today's program are those of the announcers, their guests, and callers, and do not necessarily represent those of the staff and management of His Radio Network, the Radio Training Network, or iHeartMedia.